Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Is that the ocean?
Yep.
Yeah, buddy. That's the ocean.
What's on the other side of it there?
Europe.
Yeah. Now, how long would it take?
Do not try and swim to Europe.
No.
Don't swim to Europe.
Do not.
It's Mike Shope.
Are you drinking sunscreen?
No. It's a decoy. We're drinking tequila out of sunscreen bottles.
Very strict open container laws here at the Jersey Shore. Cheers.
Oh, my God. This place is amazing.
Right?
Yeah. All right. And the sunblock drink?
Nice, guys.
They're really good.
Yeah.
Thing is, I didn't make you one.
Charlie, you're drinking sunblock.
That's good. It gets you all.
Yeah, you're ingesting viscous chemicals, and they're getting you hot.
It doesn't matter.
Okay. And the Bulldog.
What's that? You're supposed to get booze.
Oh, this is ham soaked in rum. It is loaded with booze.
Damn it, Frank. Eating your drinks? That is genius. Give me a piece of ham now.
Hey, check that out. What?
Get out of here!
I'm not sharing my ham with no dogs.
On WGR.
This is dengue-proof ham.
Sports Radio 550.
Best thing about working here is what? The personal relationships you develop over time. Which is ironic because, unless you're talking about me, we are in a room completely enclosed all day.
I don't really deal with anyone.
Most people are gone when we step out of this room.
I know a few people's names out there.
Yes. Some are even done with their workday before we arrive.
Yes.
I haven't seen Janet in weeks.
Right. Well, I mean, I think you're sort of alluding to it. The hours are pretty good.
The hours are good. Here. So this might be something you can relate to. You're like, oh, my lips are chapped. And you own chapstick, but you would never, or what do you want here? Lip balm?
Chapstick's fine, whatever. Lip balm, whatever you feel right.
You own it. Yeah. Almost everybody would have that, but it's never on you. Unless you have a purse or something. Like, when are you going to have that on you? Some people will have it in their cars.
Yeah, I do.
I'm not one of them. You do?
I have some lip balm. My wife gave me a little tube, and I went like, okay, great. I threw it in the console of my truck, and it's there.
This is Thursday?
Yes.
This is the fourth day in a row I have gotten here, and like on my way here, I realize, oh,
chapped lips.
I have chapped lips. I don't have anything for that.
That's
and
right.
I will never like make the stop just for that. Plus,
right.
I have that at home.
Right.
So I get here, and I'm not going to ask anybody for theirs. Especially you. I'm not going to ask anybody for theirs. And so I just sit here all day with chapped lips.
Okay.
Today, it hit me.
Right.
Promotions.
Right. There it is.
They call it the prize closet. It should be more like a wardrobe or some magical name or something. Like, everything is in there. The time I was cold. Here's a sweatshirt. Keep it.
Right.
Chapped lips. Here you go.
Right.
We lay these things out at our remotes.
Jelly. Sure.
I mean, like, it goes next to the keychains and the movie passes.
Yeah. There's a lot of I think tchotchkes is a word you could use to describe some of these items.
I had my son in here a few years ago. We walked back there. The promotions director took kindly to him. She said, "Would you like this Jaromir Jagr hockey stick?" Yes, he would like that. He said, "Yes, I would like that."
Yep.
So here you go. And so the wardrobe or the prize closet or whatever it is nice because you want to medicine.
Sure.
I have a headache. Here you go.
Right. No stopping.
There's like this.
No stopping at the drugstore for you. We've got a promotions department.
Backstage at Wheel of Fortune or something on a smaller scale is here down the hall. So if you ever have anything, don't forget, you can go there and they'll have it.
Thank you for on a smaller scale.
Yeah, they don't have like a trip to Aruba back there. The stick was pretty good.
A pair of matching jet skis. Yeah, no.
Yeah, right.
No, not so much.
They don't have that.
No.
More like the 70s or 80s Wheel of Fortune, like the morning Wheel of Fortune. Did you ever watch that?
I did.
Yes. I watched morning Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
Chuck Woolery.
Uh-huh.
Susan Stafford.
Wow. Yeah.
Susan Stafford turning letters. And I don't know if I know it was different. I have no idea what the show is like now. I assume it's mostly the same, but like it was bad for me when they gave you R S T N L and E to start the bonus round. Like, really? but way before that, they stopped doing the on account. Remember on account?
No, I do not remember on account.
So you would win, like, I mean, everything, the money, the dollars were much smaller, the dollar amounts. So you'd win like $800 on a turn. You'd solve the puzzle, you'd win like $845. So then you'd go, like, they'd open the curtain and you'd have to go buy stuff, the shopping spree.
Okay.
Remember that?
No.
They don't even have that anymore, do they?
No, I don't think so.
So you go back there and you buy, like, the washing machine or you buy
the
trip.
Shopping spree. I don't remember that.
And then you'd have change. And you could either get a gift certificate, like a Tiffany's gift certificate,
uh-huh.
or you could put the money on account. And if you put it on account and you won the next time, you got to use that money too. You could put it toward your next win.
That makes sense.
Love on account.
Right.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know.
The chapstick.
Yeah.
Okay.
For some reason, I remember on those shows, a show. Please, I'm not going to remember if it was Wheel of Fortune, but like promotional consideration paid for by Rice-A-Roni.
Okay, sure.
Like a year. You wash out. You don't win anything. You don't go on a shopping spree. You lose on Final Jeopardy. You blow all the money. Whatever. I'm combining shows here, and you leave. A parting gift for you is a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni.
Yeah, you know, a pretty kind of a game show staple.
Yeah.
Rice-A-Roni.
Right.
The San Francisco tree.
Indeed.
Yes. Did you read the Andy Reid story today by Robert Mays?
I did.
Loved it.
I read two pieces on the Chiefs, one of which was written by Therese Paylor, who's going to be on with us in about an hour, from Yahoo NFL, and used to cover the Chiefs. That's how we got to know him, Chiefs Briefs, back when the Bills had the Chiefs pick 2 years ago. But yes, I saw the Ringer piece when I got here.
It's
liked
good.
It a lot. Yeah. I like both pieces, but the Ringer piece was more about Reid, and I like that more. Yeah.
Yeah, I am curious about, like, how they came to be this way. Like, Reid is somebody, he's had scoreboard for many years, you know, like no ring, but the guy has had good teams forever. Eagles and Chiefs, he's always been good.
Mm-hmm.
Almost always his team has been good, any given season. And so, like, from my perspective, you know he's, to say the least, like, you know he's credible. He's not somebody, he's not a joke or anything. He's not somebody where we go, you know, like certain coaches, I can't believe that this guy is coaching. I mean, there are lots of those guys. This guy graduated past that.
Sure, I think that's right. He's never won. He's had, like most guys who've been around for as long as he's been around, there's, like, fourth down stuff or clock stuff and, like, weird kind of, you know, what are you doing here exactly? Like, why aren't you going faster? The loss, I referenced this loss to the Steelers where the Steelers only got field goals. And down in that game with, like, 4 minutes to go, the Chiefs were still, like, taking their time. And it was just kind of like, dude, what are you doing? Like, so there's stuff you can poke him with, but he's not Mike McCarthy. Like, he's a credible offensive mind in the game, I think.
It's interesting how those are such two different things. You know, like, yeah, Reid, when I used to read Bill Simmons, he was always making fun of Andy Reid. And it seemed like he had a point. He would talk about this clock management or this game day decision, and it really, and then there's like schemes.
Mm-hmm.
And this article is almost all about that. It's also about Patrick Mahomes and how the Chiefs and Reid started to get into the idea of him. And so you think about, like, with this article, and when I think about Andy Reid, I think about how those kind of jobs for a head coach are two very different things to need to be excellent at. You know, he's an offensive coach. There are defensive coaches, too. So whichever you are, you've got to do that. You've got to be, you're calling plays or you're building your offense. You've got to be excellent at that. And you've got to not be terrible anyway at the other thing.
Or so good at the first thing that it almost doesn't matter how bad you are at the other thing. Because you're so good, you're out scheming everyone, you win, and no one really even worries about how you handled the clock.
That's kind of him, right?
Yeah, I think. Maybe,
I mean, in the Indianapolis game, they had fourth and one a couple times, and just not only did they go for it, they made it look easy picking up those first downs. You didn't see, like, them out there trying to draw the defense offside or anything like that. But those things, you know, to a point, they go hand in hand. How good is your offense?
Right.
And so with this team, it's different. I would have to acknowledge, to a point, it's different for them to decide that than it would be for the Bills to decide that.
Mm-hmm.
But
right, I know I've got a thing I can go to here. It's going to work. Like, I've got confidence in my scheme and my the trigger man and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, like anything I do is probably going to work for 1 yard.
Right.
And they just ran it with, in that game, Damian Williams a couple times and got it easily. So, like, McDermott is from Reed.
Yep.
We've talked to him about Reed. I've talked to him about Reed. Like, a lot of, if I may say, a lot of what McDermott, what he comes from and what he knows is from Andy Reed. And he, with us and at press conferences, he consistently referred to his past, almost like maybe in a way where he was a little bit defensive at times. Like, I know what this is supposed to be. I was there. That was rebuilding projects with Carolina and before that with Philadelphia. Teams that were bad that got good. Like, so he, I'm sure he said as much. He sees himself as somebody that knows rebuilding firsthand. Mm-hmm. And Reed is somebody where McDermott has, like, learned a lot, and I think he wants to be like him. I mean, I think Reed is a real role model for him. And that goes with dealing with the media. And so that can be a small part of it. So I wonder, like, we've talked about this, you know, going back into the season, and you know this. Like, I have gotten, I've become hesitant in trying to predict what is going to happen here, like, negatively. Because while there's a lot of evidence, there's a lot of stuff that's been said and shown that make me, like, sort of worry for the Bills. In this article, it's shown, like, Reed adapts, and he has done that. He got the Kansas City job, and he decided from there, like, he was going to, Robert Mays wrote it, he's going to take over again. Like, I'm gonna have my hands on everything.
Right.
Like, I'm going to do this. I'm not going down another way.
He'd gotten away from that in the last couple of years. He was in Philadelphia. He kind of delegated more and more, and, you know, they ended up 4-12, and he got fired. Right.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to say that Andy Reid with that is the same thing as McDermott when it comes to the kinds of stuff he's alluded to a lot, which is, you know, the weather and winning a sort of a Bills style of football that seems pretty old fashioned and tends to turn me off. But I want to be hopeful about this. And also, by the way, in this article, like, you didn't know this about the sport, Mitchell Schwartz, a lineman for the Chiefs, is quoted extensively in this article. And he had been with Cleveland and talked about how with Cleveland, while he has friendships with teammates that mean a lot to him, they were always making changes. And we know that.
Right.
That's been the case
loads
here.
Loads of quarterbacks, loads of head coaches, loads of coordinators. And it was only, what was he there, six years, something like that? Not even. I think his first contract expired and he left and went to Kansas City.
So he said Kansas City appealed to him, or now, whichever, is a place where you would not expect that to be a problem. There's consistency in the organization.
Right. Everything was already, he used the culture word, I think Schwartz did. Like, Cleveland was always trying to, a new guy was coming in and trying to instill what they wanted to be about, so there was never any continuity. I went to Kansas City, and, like, that was already in place.
Right.
Everything was already all set. You knew what you were signing up for, you knew what the expectations were, and you just went and did, you know, just go and do your job.
I guess I've got to get to a point. I want to be hopeful that more of Andy Reid's style comes to light here, just sort of comes out here. And that's more in, like, the Bills offense. Like, McDermott is not from offense, but that's his guy. And so that part, and then, I mean, of course the Bills want to establish the other thing. They want to establish continuity. They don't want to have to run through people all the time because that's just a recipe for disaster.
No.
So they want to do that. And I can get closer to liking that all if I just felt that McDermott would adapt and that he would be more open to the stuff that Reed used to get hammered for but just doesn't seem to come up as often anymore. As the sport moves toward that, I mean, as the sport moves toward like basketball, mm-hmm. where it's faster and score more, and right. that's the big plays that the Chiefs, that they saw, that Reed saw in Patrick Mahomes in college that led them to draft him, to trade up with the Bills and do that. Like, not only is that something the Bills maybe would not have done, it's something they did not do.
Right.
They made that deal to get out of there with right. Kansas City.
Yeah, he was able to, I think, maybe do the opposite of what a lot of people do with all sports when you're looking at a prospect playing a certain way in college that is not the way it's done in the pros. I just think of people saying McDavid or Eichel are not going to be able to do what they did in juniors or in college once they get to the NHL. And they go, let's wait and see. Mahomes playing in college, I think a lot of NFL people and a lot of people who are covering that draft and trying to figure out where to rate these prospects looked at Mahomes and went, it's too much Sandlot. It's too much free form. The structure of the NFL will swallow him up, and he just won't be able to flourish. And Reed, I think, perhaps looked at Sandlot and went like, "Oh yeah, we can make that work. Like that can work for me." And I would give anybody. I think you have to give Reed a lot of credit for having the vision to get past the traditional hurdle that was there on Mahomes. That he was not the quarterback in a box. And he saw a way that I think, well ahead of time, he thought that can work for me. And like, I don't know how much of that is just conveniently clicking into place for the story now. Like how far back they were crushing on him or what. Because there is still an element of unknown and luck in drafting a quarterback like that.
That's for Therese Paylor to answer,
right,
maybe.
But I feel like, you know, I want to give them credit for seeing a guy that was not traditional in a lot of ways and recognizing how you could make that work for you in the NFL, as opposed to the opposite, which is, oh, I'm scared of that. I don't want someone who's going to do unorthodox things. I don't want someone who's going to throw it sidearm sometimes when that's what, you know, that's where the opening is. I don't want any of that. So, I mean, I think with McDermott, as it pertains to him, I mean, he's a defensive guy, so he's always, I think, going to be, even though he's from the Reed tree, and credits Reed for like helping establish him as an NFL coach. I don't know. I guess I'm more going to need to watch how his coordinators are chosen, and it looks like we'll have Daboll for a second year here, and what they're willing to do once they're more fully formed on that side of the ball. Once they have their Mitchell Schwartz playing right tackle and they've got their, is the guy's first name Mitchell? I read the thing. Okay, good. And you know, a couple of receivers or a tight end or whatever. And like, they can go and do more than they were able to do last year. But, you know, I don't know. I said earlier this week, my sense is that McDermott is going to be dragged there. And it'll be because his quarterback becomes so good that he has no choice but to just play that way.
And that's the only way.
That's kind of what I think. And Reed, meanwhile, has been pass heavy. One of the consistent criticisms when the Eagles were losing NFC championship games and just could not get there except for the one time they finally did was 60-40 pass run. There's too much passing. Reed, you know, that's fine. I can't recall for you who exactly would have been on a telecast saying it, but I'm positive it was said at least definitely more than once. Well, that's okay for winning in the regular season, but it's the playoffs now.
Which never made any sense to me.
So you can't come out and go pass run 60-40. You got to be able to run and win the trenches and all that stuff. And, you know, okay.
Well, this ties into the thing I wanted to bring up here, the value of credibility. Now, throwing the ball more has more credibility. Who do you need to convince? You come into this sport and you've got a different attitude. You've got a different style. Who do you need to convince? Everybody. You need to convince your players that you're right. You need to convince the fans. You need to convince your boss. You need to convince everybody that your unusual way of thinking or being is better. And in this sport, which is like the military, there's just not a lot of that. There's not a lot of tolerance for that. And everybody in football thinks you have to be from football to know anything. So you can be from football. You have to be from football to get in. Then once you're in, though, hey, wait a minute, why don't we try this? And that a lot of this stuff, I'm, you know, here within this point is fourth down. Within this point is going for two. All that stuff is in there. And nothing in Sean McDermott's background as a scout and a player should ever have qualified him in the least for being knowledgeable about that. As a head coach, it should be mandatory. But nothing in his credentials as an assistant coach and a scout and a player ever revealed what he knew about that. And management doesn't ask those questions. And the NFL is, if you will, littered with coaches who get all that stuff wrong. So that is a part of the flaw here. Reed, Belichick and Reed. So Reed goes to Kansas City and wants to run out of the shotgun all the time and wants to throw the ball a lot. He gets Alex Smith. By that point in his career, he can have what he wants. Mm-hmm. He'll get the credibility. Players are going to listen to him. You know, even his boss, maybe. Like, he might work for Reed in a real sense.
Yep.
People are going to assume, they're going to give him that benefit of the doubt. And new coaches don't get that. And that is worth a ton. Like, Belichick doesn't have to explain himself to anyone. All he has to do is tell you what he wants. And you're going
to
do it.
Right, even to the extent where he may choose to bench one of his very best players for the entire Super Bowl and have it cost them and still never really explain what happened.
Never explained it, came back the next year, AFC Championship at least.
Right.
So he doesn't have to win a press conference, you know? Like, a new coach, that can mean a lot. And with a guy that has that kind of record, doesn't really mean anything. The fact that he's constantly mocked for how little he says or how he acts at press conferences, just part of the mystique. You know, it doesn't ever really mean anything,
right,
to his status,
ooh, right,
as the coach of the team. And Reed has gotten there. I think Reed is 60, if I read that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's gotten there, even without a Super Bowl. Belichick has five, even without that. Right. Like, he's gotten there. So you want that. So any organization wants that. They want that for their coach, and the coach wants that for himself. To win enough, to accomplish enough, to be there for long enough that he is given that kind of respect and given that kind of benefit of the doubt from everybody. And Reed has that. So that's nice. You want to come in, you want to throw it all the time. You want to draft Mahomes and let him out, you know, just let him run, if you will.
Right.
Then that's going to happen. And, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But you get that benefit of the doubt, and that's an important thing. So it's all to say, Reed, when I think about the Bills and I think about Andy Reed, I'm a little bit hopeful. I still don't like almost anything. Not, I don't want to say almost anything. I still don't like a lot of what has been said as far as what their vision is, mm-hmm, collectively.
Right.
But you can never rule it out. You can never rule out,
right,
the big success.
Well, I mean, yeah,
there's too much randomness in it.
Yeah.
And there is somewhere, like, the Reed piece is for me, yeah, not to be ignored.
You are talking about two men from, you know, different sides of the ball. So but generally speaking, Reed's MO before this year, really last year, and this piece by Mays at the Ringer points this out too. Like, they Alex Smith was not Alex Smith last year either. Like, and we talked about that during the year. Like, they were suddenly, he was throwing the ball downfield and taking more chances, and they were different than they had been the previous years. But Reed's reputation mostly has been, like, too conservative when it matters, and, you know, just not willing to do enough. Like, just trying to win the close game and all. Like, that's what the Chiefs looked like in the playoffs, mostly under Andy Reed. 1 year and a new quarterback is all it's taken to just completely tip that upside down.
Until Sunday, at least.
Right, right.
Because Sunday is a referendum on Reed. It's a referendum on the wide-open offense versus defense, offense, yep, of the Chiefs. You know, they have home field in this game. They have the MVP under center. Like, they've got so much going for them. They better win.
Yep.
You know, they better win. It's not going to be easy. But there's a lot riding on it for the way we go year to year and sort of just, like, reassess what is best to be in this sport.
I think if they can't do a good job here, win this game, and at least get to the Super Bowl, I feel like Reed will never get out of the box that he was painted in earlier in his career, despite this year having happened. Because this is how it goes. He's getting all this credit for all this, you know, being willing to Mahomes open it up and throw it all over the place. If they lose 17-16 or something and can't do anything on offense, I think Andy Reid goes back to the start again. He's back in the spot where, like, I don't know, this guy, you know, it's conservative, big games, whatever. Like, it's all just there.
Or it'll be just, like, too fast and loose. Because that's where football wants to, I think most people who talk about it want to end up. Like, these amazing throws Mahomes makes across his body. Like, one of those that goes the wrong way, be like, see, somebody's going to say, right. See, I told you, you know, defense wins championships. 803-0550, Chiefs and Patriots, really compelling on Sunday, both games are. Talk about the Sabres win. Therese Paler on the Chiefs, as Bulldog mentioned, and Sal will join us too. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here for your calls on WGR.
No, I think that they can stop New England because the Patriots don't travel well. This year, they're not a very good road team. I mean, they're 3-5 on the road, and then if you really go through history, you see that Tom Brady has not won a playoff game on the road since he's 29 years old. That was back in 2006. And so it's a different game. He's 3-4 career-wise as a road team, and he really won two games pretty early in his career.
John Clayton. If you just take that and isolate it, it can sound like a pretty strange criticism.
Just 3-4?
Has not won a road playoff game since 06 or something. Is that what he said? You know, like, come on.
Right. They haven't played hardly any, right?
Right. Just, it sounds like a criticism when it's put like that, just set apart like that. What's wrong with this guy? He can't win a road playoff game. It's been like 13 years. Right. What is this guy's problem? He's a choker.
Home for two games every year.
Yeah.
In the playoffs, that's his problem.
So 2006 is Indianapolis, the AFC Championship against Indianapolis, a high-scoring game that they lose. It's also the year that, I think this is the year the week before they won in San Diego. And I watched that game from Fenway Park. There's a bar inside Fenway Park. Right. Have you been there? Like, you know, there might be a ton of them, but there's one in January. It's open.
Okay. I've not been to that bar. I haven't been to Fenway since it got all reconfigured. I think there's a lot of bars in there.
Yeah.
Though.
But there might be only one that's open in the winter.
Right.
When there's not a ball game.
Right.
Or maybe only a couple. But this one is like right up street level.
Yeah.
And I was there for the weekend with my wife. We went to see the Sabres play on Monday. Might have been Martin Luther King Day game. I got very sick on the drive home.
I remember this. Yeah. Remember this trip?
Yeah, that was pretty awful. Yeah. Like speeding, kind of a snowy night.
Because right, you were sick.
Because I was sick. I needed to get to a rest stop. Yeah. And it was the first time I had thrown up in like a decade.
Oh,
but I could tell this was about to happen. My wife and my sister and her boyfriend are in the back seat, like four of us in the car. And I'm like speeding up just to try to not have to pull over and just throw up. And so then you get sick. And maybe you think it like your first thought might be, I'm better now.
Well, that's over, right?
Yeah. So back in the car, and 5 minutes later, like nope. And it was the whole night. Like it was just. We stayed at a motel near the Beechnut Factory. You know where that is?
Uh huh. Fultonville.
Is that Fultonville?
I think around there.
Herkimer.
Yeah.
Kind of close to that.
Yeah.
What an awful night.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna drive right by there tomorrow on my way. I'm off tomorrow, and I'm going out east to visit a school with Owen. And I think
you'll wave to it for me.
I feel like it's not it's not what it was. It's either, it's not gone, I don't think, but I feel like the last couple times I've gone by, like, it's not as prominent as it used to be. Like, maybe the big, the where the sign used to be, maybe that's gone now. And, like, that used to be the first thing that always, like,
stood out. The big letters on top of the building.
Right, and, like, and I think the letters have been gone, but, like, still the structure that the sign was on, that the letters hung on, I think that's gone now, too.
I don't know.
I'll give you a report tomorrow afternoon.
Let me know. I heard on the morning show today, the morning guys were talking about Jeremy had a list of free agents, NFL free agents. He had somebody's top 25 free agents.
Okay.
Did you catch that?
I did not.
I don't know whose list it was.
I slept right through the morning show today.
You did?
Yeah.
As opposed to your usual get up and then go back to bed before you come in?
Right. My wife took Leo to school. She had to go downtown for a meeting, so I got to sleep. And I watched the hockey game, and I wrote about it, and I slept until 9:45.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. I watched it too. So he had somebody's top 25 NFL free agents.
Okay.
Two offensive linemen, no receivers.
Great.
Le'Veon Bell was like number two or three.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Tate.
Right.
Wait.
Yeah.
Was it two receivers? Golden. I don't know. What am I thinking now? I think it was two linemen and no receivers. They mentioned Golden Tate. He might have been on the list, but I don't know.
Okay.
But the point is, if there were any, it wasn't many.
It's not deep. It's not a deep group of receivers now.
Golden Tate is one. Randall Cobb is one. And then you might have other guys who, you do have other guys that have not had the careers those two guys have had. You know, also different skill sets, but the point being that to spend at wide receiver and even offensive line, well, good luck.
Yep.
Lots of linebackers, lots of DBs, safeties on the list, as I recall, but right, not much in the way of offense.
Right.
And the draft is like that at the top.
Right. That's right. That's not to say you're not going to find something that you need on offense in the draft, but it's pretty top heavy defensive wise.
I'm told they were honorable mentions on this list. They were not in the top 25, so no receivers.
Okay, right. So I mean, what does that mean? Shop for your linemen in free agency and try to get your skill position guys in the draft. That I think is a very straight line, rudimentary sort of way to look at it. Like, I doubt it'll be that definitive one way that the Bills would be sitting around going, well, we shouldn't draft linemen. We're going to have to draft skill guys. Let's go. The idea is, I think, to try to find somebody who is underutilized currently in the role that they have, that you liked him coming out of college but didn't get him, and you followed his career so far. He's played 4 years for whatever team he's been on, and there's a receiver I'm talking about. Modest production, but you think you can get him to blast off, and you sell him on that. Like, that's who I think you shop for in free agency as a receiver. And I don't have a name for you to get, because I don't have this top 25 list. I doubt a guy like that would be on there. But a guy like that does exist. It's a question of whether you can be right about whether you can get him off or not. Whether you are you know, all your scouting and everything you think you've accumulated as far as knowledge about this player, whether or not it will, like, actually work for you.
I don't know if it's exactly 4 years, but the guy I'm thinking of, and there may be better examples, is Laquan Treadwell of the Vikings. But so, like, a player like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, these will all be players that Brandon Bean will have scouted.
Right.
And will have a book on.
Right. I don't think the top of the free agent class in receivers is going to be worth the money you'd have to spend. You'd be getting – Randall Cobb has a body of work. Everybody has watched him play in big games with Aaron Rodgers, and it's a name. And Golden Tate is this, and maybe just a little less, or maybe not. I mean, he was in Seattle. He played in some big games. But you're going to be paying for that, and is that where I want to be? You're talking about a guy that's already maybe put in his best work he's going to do in the league, and now I'm going to pay him crazy money. And am I going to regret that in 2 years? Probably.
I think that football, like, I'm thinking about baseball for a second here, because baseball has moved to a place where they're just not taking that bait. There's pressure on teams to go get the best guys. There's pressure on the Bills to go get big names or any names in free agency to spend their money. And baseball has now evolved to a point where they all know from the numbers that it really is not a good idea to do that.
Right.
And we've talked about this with hockey for many years, too. The Sabres are usually not in on, at least going back, especially pre-Pegula, they would not be in on top free agents, and we would be in here going, that's fine. It's a little lonely, but it's probably smart. So baseball has decided it's smart not to do that, and maybe hockey has. And football, I don't know if they've decided that or not, but they keep getting more money to spend.
Right.
And careers are shorter, and contracts are not guaranteed. I predict there's no sign of slowing as far as football goes in this way. Like, they're going to throw money at guys like Golden Tate. I mean, he had 80 catches or 90 catches 3 years in a row before this year. He's going to do great, I think. I think Bell will do great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think these guys, you know, even for a running back in this in this league.
I thought that about Bell all along. Like, every, you know, what's he doing? He's never going to make this money back. Well, let's see. Like, you know, let's just see how much guaranteed money he gets. I think he's going to do great. You know, I don't know. I look forward to sort of unraveling this ball of twine that is what the Bills should do with their roster with you and with the audience from now until, you know, free agency and then ultimately the draft. It just wouldn't surprise me if the Bills thought Bell was a good idea.
Me neither.
And if, in part, maybe the best I could do to ever get encouraged about that is that the cap keeps going up. I've got all this money, and he's good, and if I want to use him to catch the ball, all the better. Like, you know, like, I think that could really work for me. But
I don't want to think that McCoy is in the way. I think McCoy should be gone by now, and he's not. And the Bills talked about wanting him back. And if they don't sign Le'Veon Bell and someone else does, that's it. And you won't know just from that whether the Bills even liked the idea. You'd have to sort of dig into that to find that out, and that might be possible to find out, or it might not be. But I don't want to think that McCoy being here means anything to that. I don't think they should sign Le'Veon Bell. I, like you, think this organization could think that's a great idea.
Right.
I mean, they were really unproductive at that position, and they do have money.
Right.
And there's value in the name, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those reasons and maybe others, I could see them doing that, but I do not want to think that 31-year-old McCoy is why they wouldn't.
No, right. No, I totally agree. And just so we're clear, like, I don't want them to do it either, but it's not the worst thing I've ever heard, given the amount of money they've got and where they are at the position. I would rather they draft some guy in the third round and play him rather than Kev McCoy or sign Le'Veon Bell. Honestly, like, that would be my preference. I think that's looked like something that can work for you. So go do that. All right. You want to apply all this manpower, all this knowledge you've got that you used to draft Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds last year. Okay. Go do that with a running back. Okay. Just go do that with a running back and find a guy that you have evaluated fits all of your criteria, all of your culture, all of your everything, and also can be as good as someone I'd have to pay 10 times the money to. Go do that. I don't think that's impossible.
Tomorrow I'll talk to Mario Puig, who will know all those names inside and out, and I'll ask him this question. You'll be driving past Beechnut.
Right.
And you know what not signing Bell because you have McCoy would be? That's the rare example of two wrongs making a right.
Right.
Because your mom tells you when you're growing up, two wrongs do not make a right. Here, they would.
I've said a few times here back in the season still going, like, the only reason I can get behind McCoy still being on this team is that it keeps them from drafting a running back at 9 or giving Le'Veon Bell $15 million a year to play for their team. We've got our running back. We don't need Le'Veon Bell. We don't need to draft a running back in the first round. Okay.
They have to think they need to get better there, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. They might think McCoy is the guy to do it. That'll be that's as good as anything about them for me this offseason to watch. You can't find out the answer in the offseason unless they move on him. Then we'll just hear all summer how they think he has a lot left. But so it might not be until September where we get any clues at all about that. But that's an interesting area for them. Therese Paylor on the Chiefs and the playoffs coming up in about 15 minutes. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We haven't gotten to the Sabres game yet. We will. 803-0550 is our number. This is WGR.
I don't think about it too much, you know, what people might say or think, but we're playing against a very good football team, and they're the first seed for a reason. They've had a great season. We're going to have to go into a really tough environment and play our best football. So it should be a, you know, it's a great opportunity for us, and hopefully we can take advantage of it.
Brady, just mentioning their last road playoff win, is it? It's the game in San Diego. It actually is right to say San Diego this time, in 2006. And I mentioned how I watched that game from Boston. And I'm looking at that game now, 24-21. I don't remember this, really. But they're down 21-13 in the fourth quarter, driving. And Brady throws on fourth and five at the San Diego 41 with 6:25 left. He throws an interception. And the intercepting player, Marlon McCree, fumbles. And New England gets it back, first down. If the pass is incomplete, San Diego gets the ball, 6 minutes left, mm-hmm. up by eight. Instead, they intercept him and then fumble it back on the same play. There was a challenge. The ruling was upheld. Mm-hmm. About a minute later, touchdown. They go for two, make it. Chargers punt, three and out. And the... Do you remember this game? The Patriots drive for a field goal with like 8 seconds. No, like a minute left. You remember that game at all? It was a Sunday afternoon game.
No. Sunday afternoon, like San Diego, wouldn't have been early. It would have been like, right. so late. Okay, yeah. No, it does, not. No, I don't recall it. Okay. I would guess that I watched it, but I don't remember it.
How about last night's hockey game? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Do you have to guess if you watched it?
Yes, I do. No, I watched.
You wrote a column about it.
I watched every minute of it. Yes, I took the I did the easiest thing I think you can do, short of I don't want to say that. I wrote as the game was happening. Like, so it's what would amount to a live blog. If I knew how to log into the website and let people watch the game with me, it was basically that. So, yeah, I did that. I liked doing this, and I mentioned it a couple times. One of the big struggles to stay up that late for me is, like, it's snack city. Because you're tired, you're falling asleep, like, oh, there's got to be some chips here somewhere. Like, yep. I'll go rip into that. That keeps you awake because you're eating.
You're doing something.
Right. You're eating. It's not healthy in any way, but like, whatever. I'm just going to eat. Oh, well, I'm more than halfway through this bag of sour cream and cheddar Ruffles. I might as well just finish it. And just plowing through the chips. And like,
it's you're halfway through it when you open it.
Right.
There's nothing in there.
That's right. So it's gross. Well, I think maybe for my health, I think I have found a new diet. What I need to do is like write live blog commentaries about sporting events, because I'm writing, there was no time to eat chips or go like cut up some cheese to have cheese and crackers. I was busy. I mean, there were the intermissions. I did have a bowl of cereal between second period and third period.
I love that you eat cereal at night.
The cereal yeah. takes were on point.
Thank you. The late night bowl of cereal, I go way back. I got a lot of history with the late night bowl of cereal. That was a go-to snack when I was a kid.
Listen, I'm not teasing you. Like, I drank a Blue Light last night just during the third period.
It was a fun game to watch.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, they played really well. They did, you know, third period, they only got the two shots. They both went in, thank God. But I don't know. I liked them less. I've liked them a lot this year. I don't know. Am I a jerk? Am I being too positive? I liked them a lot last night.
Well, the goal, like, twice. The first time you think, I did, that Eichel's just stalling to get off.
Right.
And then the second time, I also thought that. Maybe you thought he was going. I didn't. I still think he's just stalling to get off.
Yeah,
he's going to pass the puck back to Ullmark if he needs to.
I couldn't believe he was still on the ice when he ends up with the puck there. I'm like, what is he still doing out there? I thought you could have got off already. Like, why?
The rush, the other guys had changed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was that whole mess in front of their own end, and he was back in the corner. And, like, I don't remember how he ends up with the puck in the neutral zone, but it just surprised me that suddenly he was there with the puck. Mm-hmm. So I thought, and Reinhardt, I think there was, I read, I don't know if it was John Vogel in The Athletic. I saw a picture of Reinhardt's like, he's got a leg over the bench. And he says, I read a quote, like, I was ready to go on. I thought he was just going to turn around and kill time. So I was ready to change. And turns out, like, Jack noticed, he says, Giordano had been out there the whole time, too. Mm-hmm. So I know I've got a tired guy here. So it's a little like basketball. Like, I think I can take this guy. Right? So I'm just gonna do it. Yeah, it was really great.
You might predict this. I'm thinking about Jason Pominville talking about his goal in Ottawa.
Right.
His shorthanded
right.
goal in Ottawa. And we asked him, like, a year later or so, what's something about that play that people don't know? Or not as many people mentioned to you? And he said, well, I was at the beginning of the shift, and the other guys
Everybody was done. Right.
Yeah, right? Or was it that, or was it the other way around?
No.
I was at the beginning of the shift.
He had just gotten out there, and everybody on Ottawa had been out there for the power play. They were gassed.
So take it to them.
Right.
Yeah, great goal, and the Sabres get a win in Calgary. They'll try for another one tomorrow night in Vancouver. More on the Sabres later. Next, Therese Paylor talking the Chiefs and the Patriots here on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.